Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Friend Rap Show. I'm going to be your host for today and tomorrow, whilst our beloved Nicholas is away on leave, and I'm joined by my co-host, Herman Pretorius. We are eager to jump into today's stories, so let's begin. The first one was an article in News 24 by Carol Payton, where she's basically asking the questions: what has BEE delivered to South Africa over the last 20 years? Has it been beneficial in getting us closer to ending poverty, growing jobs, getting growth going, or has it done the reverse or the opposite? And she writes as follows: what are the aspects of BEE that should be reconsidered? And she says that although the intention for BEE was to accelerate deracialization of the economy at all levels in business ownership, management skills across the population, it has led to the development of an extensive and growing number of levers in the economy, some more effective than others. The consequences have been positive and negative. She goes on to break some of the positive effects of BEE as growth in the population of Black middle class, which I'm not particularly convinced can be attributed to BEE. And then to the aspects of negativity, she highlights some of the BEE Commission's review of BEE and how much of the money spent on those BEE contractors went directly to the businessmen and women who were contracted to do business with the state. And that despite all this money that's gone towards BEE initiatives, so many people still live in poverty. We have averaged less than 1% growth over the last couple of years, and job creation has just fallen on by the wayside. Herman, we have been campaigning on BEE. You may have to mute your mic there. There's a bit of feedback. Okay, no worries. So we have been campaigning on BEE, undertaking a review of our own, where we are asking the questions about the cost of BEE in jobs and investment in campaigns at the Institute of Race Relations. But there's still much more that needs to be done in unpacking the effects of BEE and whether it has actually accelerated economic inclusion, enabled growth. What are some of your reflections on what Ms. Payton writes?
So I think one of the first things that we should look at is the polling that she relies on that was carried out by News 24 and Ipsos. And it on the question of whether BEE should be continued or should end, we get 46 of Black people saying it should continue, 36 of white people, 37 colored, and 25% Indian or Asian. 32%, though, of Black South Africans say it should not continue, it should be ended. 57% white say it should be ended, 47% coloreds, and 56% Indians and Asians, with then the rest being don't knows. So the interesting thing is that there isn't, in any racial classification or any racial category, a majority support for BEE continuing. The closest we have to that is a plurality amongst Black South Africans, according to this polling. But 22% is unknown. So you've got 46% say it should continue, 32% says it should end, but 22% say it should. They don't know. They don't know either way. So the first thing is, no population group gives majority support to BEE. I think that is quite telling. Then we can consider the fact as to why that might be. And the Institute has been polling BEE similarly over many years, and we've found that 85% of Black South Africans say they have not personally benefited from BEE. So I think we are here in a situation where BEE, those who say it should continue, include some who have not personally taken or had advantage from it, but who still sort of play the BEE lottery, that at some point it should continue because I might gain benefit from it. That is not a very, very strong endorsement of the policy. But I do think there is something very telling in the fact that we can ask these questions in 2025. I remember when I started at the Institute 6 years ago, I was called a white supremacist for just saying that BEE wasn't a good system. I made this point that a system that places Cyril Ramaphosa as disadvantaged, the multimillionaire Cyril Ramaphosa as a disadvantaged individual, versus John Steenhuisen, a white man who couldn't afford to finish his university studies. According to the law, the white guy who couldn't afford to finish university is the advantaged one, and the black multimillionaire president, he is the disadvantaged one. I got called a white supremacist for that. And yet here we are, and we can have this debate. And even mainstream commentators, analysts, journalists like Carol Payton, with whom you can disagree or not disagree, but you have to respect her. She's has good established credibility in the commentary policy space. Even she finds that there are questions for BEE to answer. That's a massive, I think, step in the right direction, and showing that we are seeing a change in the weather, that we can ask these questions. Now, I'm a bit disappointed by her blanket assertions, as you point out, that, you know, there are good things happened over the time of BEE, therefore those good things happened because of BEE. I think there's a lack of causation there, and I would have loved to see alternative modeling of how the South African middle class would have progressed or had progressed between 1994 and today at the varying points of intensity of BEE, because BEE isn't just on or off. We see now in the employment equity nonsense, we see that there are various intensities of these policies. So I'm a bit disappointed that anything good that happened in the last 20 years, whether it is the black middle class, whether it is job creation, whether it is, I just think it's a bit begging the question to say that BEE was in effect, good things happened during this time, therefore BEE had the positive consequence. Where the cruel reality actually is that after 20 years of BEE, what we can say empirically is that black unemployment is up, black youth unemployment is up, productivity is down, overall unemployment is up, our economic competition in the world is down. Now, I'm not saying BEE is solely responsible for those things, but if BEE were a success, I think those things would not be present as failures to the extent that they are.
Indeed, I think that, as you called it, this blanket attribution of a creation of a black middle class to BEE fails to ignore so many other things, like the role that education played, like the earlier years in which we gained so much growth in the South African economy before BEE was formally effective. She just seems to, blaze through that to make the case for this broad idea that BEE somehow can be rewarded for all of that. Moving on to what has kept us all on our toes and certainly been the bane of my existence is the issue of that we are now on our third tabling of the budget. This is going to be a historic budget, if anything, if all these attempts are anything to go by. And it's an article from Business Live where the question of if the third budget tabling would be tilted in the DA's favor. This is because the DA, as a member of the Government of National Unity, has been asking for a review. And it seems, as the journalist phrases it in this article, that a spending review, may be imminent. It says here that the termination of the half percentage point VAT increase through a court order paves the way for Treasury to craft a third budget for the 2025-26 fiscal year, with the DA expected to increase pressure on the department to implement its budget priorities. On Sunday, the Western Cape High Court ruled in favor of the DA and the EFF's application to suspend Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana's VAT hike before its 1 May implementation date. This ruling came shortly after the minister decided to abandon the VAT increase. And the DA is quoted saying here that a spending review is necessary. because there will be no VAT increase. And so some things are going to have to be cut from the budget, but not frontline services. And Helen Ziller said the DA will continue to work on a shared agenda for growth and jobs. Some victory for the DA seems to be the case here, Herman. Without increasing the VAT, the ANC is forced to actually think through how it's going to source revenue to supplement its fiscal shortfall. And I must say, Julius Malema made this comment in his press briefing, I believe yesterday or was the day before, where he said previously the ANC never had to negotiate its positions or even think through them because they had muscle, they had numbers in parliament. And when the opportunity for debate or the opportunity to think through these policies came about, they would just force them through because they had numbers in their ranks. But now they've got great difficulty. They are short of those numbers and actually have to persuade people to support their policy, which again forces them to think. What do you think about this development in the VAT and the budget case?
So I think Mr. Malema is clearly watching the Daily Friends show, because that comment has been made, that this was the first really democratic budget, if you can put it that way. It was this first budget where the parliamentary makeup didn't guarantee one party could just get its way. This was the first budget where people can actually draw a direct causal link between the vote they cast last year and the budget circumstances this year. The people of South Africa chose to deny any one party the ability to write, pass, and implement a budget. And that is a healthy sign of democratic contest. Now, we might think about the markets and the fact that the markets are unhappy with this budget. Yes, but markets always dislike uncertainty. And if you don't like uncertainty, don't live in a democracy. The point of democracy is to have this competition to be vibrant in the political space. So the first thing is, I think Malema is absolutely right. And I think the muscle memory within the ANC, particularly within Treasury, was so ingrained that it expected to be able to lift this thing without realizing it was now heavier than ever before. So it strained its back, and that is why we are in Parliament again. With the death of the Pope, we can think that in Catholic history, there have been years of three popes, you know, like 1978, I think, was a year of three popes, where three popes were elected. We're in the year of the three budgets. Hopefully, we don't go the route of, you know, 1276, when there were four popes. So hopefully we don't go to the fourth budget. But this is democracy in action. And it's understandable that the markets don't like it. It's understandable that businesses don't like it. But we cannot pretend that this is not what the people voted for. And I think it's quite right to see Advantage DA into this next round of budget negotiations, because not only did the DA get some substantial wins in the first budget, some really sensible, pragmatic reforms that were minor, not major, but something in terms along specifically on fiscal prudence. Not only did they get some of that in the budget, and it's quite one can expect those good things to stay more or less. They also fought the ANC from within the GNU, one to stay within the GNU, one in the court, and clearly one in the realm of public opinion. I know of at least two other private polls beyond the IRR's own polling that put the DA above 30% in the last few weeks because of this VAT debate. So the DA is going into this with political strength, the likes of which I don't think they've ever had. If I were the ANC, I would understand that I got the first call wrong, and that the popularity of the DA could become the popularity of the GNU, could become the popularity of the ANC, if we start seeing economic growth. Because if there's one fact that is demonstrated in the last 20 years of elections, it is that when the ANC does well when the economy does well. In 2004, they got 70% of the vote because we had a growing economy. Unemployment was inching downwards. Housing, water, electricity, rollouts were good. So if the ANC had any clear idea, they would cede the DA this temporary advantage, because in the long run, the GNU's success will become the economic success of South Africa, if possible, and that will reflect well on the ANC. So I think that the call is right. The DA is going into this with strength, and the ANC should use that strength, perhaps cynically, perhaps selfishly, but whatever the case may be, a growing economy, whether it's overseen by the DA's budget negotiations or the ANC's policy implementations, a growing economy is good for the political parties in the union buildings and good for the people of South Africa.
That last point, I hope, is especially a priority in this attempt, third attempt to have a budget prioritizing growth and jobs. And I welcome your joke about Julius Malema possibly watching the show. Moving on to our last story, we have already spent so much time on the first two, but I know you had comments about the outcome of the 2025 Canadian election that saw Pierre Poilievre, Conservative Party leader, who seemed to be doing well in their polling, not only not manage to oust the Liberals, but also lose his parliamentary seat and give way for Mark Carney of the Liberals to become the next Canadian Prime Minister. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I love Anglican politics, sort of Australian, British, and Canadian politics. These are fun political systems. The New Zealand one is growing on me. But what I think is so important about the Canadian experience is 3 months ago, the Conservative Party, the CPC, had a 20-point opinion poll lead over the Liberals. Pierre Poilievre had managed to park his party on the right place to win an election fought by Justin Trudeau, the previous Prime Minister, Liberal Party leader, and on the issue of the carbon tax. Specific leader, tax. Does that not ring a bell to what the next election in South Africa might be? Specific leader, Ramaphosa won't be there anymore. Tax, the VAT question. The long and short of it is that until 3 months ago, the Conservative Party was the clear favorites to win this election. The polling showed it. The betting market showed it. They themselves were prepping to come into power with a landslide. And then they lost the argument. They lost control of the economic argument. And that is now the risk for any party, MK, EFF, DA, who have seen a spike in the polling recently with the VAT issue. Do not assume that a lead gained now is a lead that's going to be sustained unless you keep the argument on which you won that lead alive. The DA, with their first ever polling lead in IRR polling history, should be very careful of thinking mission accomplished. Mission just started if we are thinking towards the 2029 general elections. The Canadian election turned on a leadership change and on a tax issue. We are heading into a series of elections where leadership and tax is again going to be those pressing issues. And any party thinking that that battle is won before the votes are counted will be in for a rude awakening and should have Pierre Poilievre on speed dial.
Well, there you have it, folks. That is it from us here at the Daily Friend Rap Show. Be sure to stay tuned in tomorrow for the next episode. Thanks for joining and goodbye.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.